Hello and welcome to Python Bytes, where we deliver Python news and headlines directly to your earbuds. This is episode 381, recorded April 30th, 2024. And I am Brian Aachen.
And I'm Michael Kennedy.
And this episode is brought to you by Scout APM. Listen to their spot later in the show and connect with your hosts if you'd like to. We're at M. Kennedy, at Brian Aachen, and at Python Bytes, all at fostodon.org. Connect with us on Mastodon. And if you are listening and would like to join us live sometime to be part of the audience, you can go to pythonbytes.fm/live and check that out. And while you're there, while you're at pythonbytes.fm, go ahead and sign up for the Friends of the Show list. And that way you will get an email announcement after we have the everything all polished up and put up online. So what you got for us first, Michael?
Well, first I have a new audio setup because I'm traveling this week. And I had a much nicer setup, Brian, until these guys... these construction guys dropped in and started causing a ruckus. Could you describe the ruckus? I don't hear any ruckus. Little breakfast club. I'm on the East Coast this week visiting my dad, and there's a ruckus. So I'm in a slightly different setup. It's a little echoey, so forgive me, folks, for the echo. I'll be back to the studio next week.
Connecting with Michael in the field.
That's right, reporting from the field. I did see a wild turkey over there, and there have been a couple of squirrels, baby squirrels were playing, so it's very exciting. But not as exciting as Py2WASM, the Python to WASM web assembly compiler. Now, Brian, it would be entirely reasonable to ask or to point out that there is already a WASM version of CPython, so why would it be exciting? More exciting than baby squirrels? Well, let's see. So really, it's about performance. This comes from a company called WASMR. They make WASMR Edge. Don't fully understand WASMR Edge. I'll talk about it for a second in a minute. But they basically have like cloud computing, but what you deliver are WebAssembly things to run rather than full native code to run. So they can do them closer to the edge, like CDN endpoints, things like that. Okay. But regardless of how you run it, they've come up with this thing called Py2WASM. And so you can take your code and compile it to this. And it's not quite as fast as true native CPython. But what I didn't realize that the CPython WASM is like 1/5 as fast as native Python.
Okay.
So this is 3 times faster than the alternatives if you're going to do anything WebAssembly. So that's pretty cool. And that makes it maybe 2/3 the speed of truly native Python. Wow. Rather than compiling C to WebAssembly and interpret it in a JavaScript runtime, which I guess I understand why that's slower.
Yeah.
All right. So pretty interesting. You just pip install Py2WASM, and then you just Py2WASM your program, and you output your .WASM. And actually, that, I mean, you can run it in WASMR, but it also kind of just opens up the possibility to run interesting things on the web and web-based platforms in general, right?
That's pretty easy workflow.
Yeah, it doesn't look too bad. And the pip install one is one time, right? Like you get that set up, good to go. Now, this is actually based on Nootka. Am I saying that right? Nootka, I believe, is the Python compiler. And so that's both awesome, but also has an effect. And the effect is that Nootka, I'm saying that's close, right? Only supports 3.11 so far. And so your code will only work on Python 3.11. But you know, honestly, these days, 3.11, 3.12, they're real similar, right? There's not a lot of features that we go like, can't use it. Can't use 3.11 these days, right? That's kind of as mainstream as you get. Most people that have a lot of really hard requirements for stability are a step behind anyway, right?
Yeah. Not to diss anybody that worked on 3.12. 3.12 is awesome, but yeah.
Oh, no. I mean, when we have 3.13, 3.12 will be kind of like the mainstream one, right? Not saying nothing's wrong with that. It's just a lot of people stick one version behind, that's all.
Yeah, that's pretty neat.
Absolutely.
I'm excited to try that for something.
Yeah. Exactly. So it's awesome. I so want a front-end framework to be based on PyScript and the MicroPython runtime. And all of that, but we don't have that yet. And so until we do, I don't have a huge use case. I mean, in the data science world, there's a lot of reasons for like, hey, can we push the compute for this computationally expensive thing to the browsers so that we don't have to pay all the cloud computing costs, just like let them download Py2WASM and run it locally, right? That would be awesome. But if you're not doing that, now, if we could have a front-end framework in Python, I'd be all about it. Well, just one thing to wrap up this article here that announces this. They also talk about like, well, how could you get Python into WebAssembly. There are ways to do it. There's ways to make it faster. You could use a subset of Python. You could use a JIT. You could use static analysis, et cetera, et cetera. So they talk about using Cython, R Python. Have you heard of R Python? Transforms typed code into C and then compiles it with a normal C compiler.
Okay.
I didn't know that, but look at that. You just say R Python, hello world.py, and boom, here's a binary executable. That's actually kind of interesting. Okay. And then some other options. You could do Python JIT, PyPy, PyPy is probably the most common one of those. Then you can do static analysis with MyPyC. And finally, the one that they chose was Noika, that one, right? And then they talk about how they use it here. So if people want to dig deeper, there's a lot more to go here, but I think that's enough for introducing the idea.
Yeah, and I do appreciate that they talked about their trade-offs and why they picked one over the other and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Interesting. Pretty neat. Pretty neat as well. All right, over to you.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about where you get packages from. So normally, I take a look at PyPI.org to look for stuff. And that's kind of where stuff's coming from. And unless you have a local repo, if you do pip install, it's coming from PyPI. Or local, or your company or something like that. But in the end, this is the place that we shove all the stuff that people share. And you can browse things. Like I picked one of mine, PyTest Check. And it's pretty quick. You can see a bunch of stuff about it, the maintainers, some of the meta. And the reason why I'm covering this is because that's kind of what you get with PyPI, this browse feature. But there's a couple other options that I wasn't aware of, and I'm pretty excited about Oven. So both Oven and what's the other one? PyPI Browser. So let's take a look at Oven. So I just learned about this recently. It's from FrostMing and really slick interface. And when you search for something here, you get like something similar to what you see on PyPI. But there's some meta information on the left, and you've got the README documentation on the right, the description. But there's also, this is kind of fun. It's got, the authors is blank. I wonder what I'm doing wrong here. But anyway, it says how to install it in case you didn't know, like pip install, PDM, RAI, and poetry instructions for how to install something. Kind of fun. The thing that I really enjoy is some of the extra stuff that it's adding is, so some of the other extra stuff is a really great browser for great look at what the versions. So this is a really clean old version interface and how old they are. And then the file browser is kind of amazing. So you've got both wheels. So I'm distributing both a wheel and a tarball. And within the wheel, you can check to see, you can just see all the files in here. You can even look inside individual files. This is pretty amazing to be able to inspect what you're getting with your wheel before you even try to install it.
So that is cool. It's really, for people who are not pulling this up while they're listening, it looks very much like the source view, the code view in GitHub actually, but based directly on the wheel.
Yeah, it's pretty great. And then even the tarball pulls things apart, and you can see what's in there through the tarball. This is pretty amazing. All the metadata, and then just everything. You can just completely view it without even installing it or downloading it or anything. So pretty awesome to look at different things here. It is open source, and it is based on, I think it's JavaScript, I think JS, JavaScript, and something called Remix, which I'm not familiar with. But pretty new project, but pretty exciting. I think this is gorgeous and helpful to the community. I think I saw this on the announcement for Oven, was comparing it to also PyPI Browser. And I'm like, I didn't know about that. So let's take a look at PyPI Browser. So PyPI Browser, PyPI.browser.org, also has, you can search for packages. This is not trying to replace the PyPI interface too much. It's just so you can take a look at wheels. So being able to look at the metadata and the package content within. Oh, wow. You can just like see all the stuff. So yeah, PyPI Browser allows you to go in and look at all the code, but there's a little more clicking around to be able to see everything. So that's why I think that's one of the reasons for the Oven is to try to maybe clean up this interface a little bit. But still, this is pretty cool. And then one of the neat things about PyPI Browser is that it is based in, it's written in Python. It's open source. Both are open source, but this one's written in Python on Starlet. So it's a Starlet app. And it even says that one of the benefits of this is you can use it as a browser for a private PyPI registry at your company or an internal registry. So that's pretty cool. So I don't know what the difference is with trying to install this versus other things. But anyway, a couple neat ways to browse Python packages.
Yeah, both are new to me and very interesting. I like Oven a lot. It looks real good.
Yeah, the interface is just gorgeous. I guess, of course, this is mostly the image is neat, but it looks nice. It says Oven to bake pies. No, not to bake pies, to explore Python packages. And for a while, I was like, what's going on? What, I don't get the joke. I didn't get the joke for a few minutes. And then it's the pie is in the oven. I get it now. Yeah.
So, yeah. Very nice. Anyway, very
I'm a little slow sometimes. So do you know what's not slow? Scout APM.
Let me tell you real quick about Scout APM. They're big supporters of Python Bytes, so we appreciate that very much. So if you are tired of spending hours trying to find the root cause of issues impacting your performance, then you owe it to yourself to check out Scout APM. They're a leading Python application performance monitoring tool, APM, that helps you identify and solve performance abnormalities faster and easier. Scout APM ties bottlenecks such as memory leaks, slow database queries, background jobs, and the dreaded N+1 queries that you can end up if you do lazy loading in your ORM, and then you say, oh no, why is it so slow? Why are you doing 200 database queries for what should be one? So you can find out things like that. And it links it back directly to source code, so you can spend less time in the debugger and tailing logs and just finding the problems and moving on. And you'll love it because it's built for developers by developers. It makes it easy to get set up. Seriously, you can do it in less than 4 minutes. So that's awesome. And the best part is the pricing is straightforward. You only pay for the data that you use with no hidden overage fees or per seat pricing. And I just learned this, Brian. They also have, they provide the pro version for free to all open source projects. So if you're an open source maintainer and you want to have Scout APM for that project, just shoot them a message or something on their pricing page about that. So you can start your free trial and get instant insights today. Visit pythonbytes.fm/scout. The link is in your podcast player show notes as well. And please use that link. Don't just search for them because otherwise they don't think you came from us. And then they'd stop supporting the show. So please use our link, pythonbytes.fm/scout. Check them out. It really supports the show.
Right. Thank you, Scout. Now on to the next thing, which is a freeze frame of Paul Everett in YouTube here doing an announcement. So I want to just give a quick shout out to this new autocomplete code intelligence engine that's in PyCharm. People know I'm a big fan of PyCharm, right? I talk about it all the time. But if you have any of the pro tools, including PyCharm Pro, there's something that really you've noticed, but if you haven't used it lately, you wouldn't notice, obviously. And they've added, you know, how people have GitHub Copilot and some of these other things that they can plug into their development tools, Brian?
Yeah.
Well, the way that works is it takes a section of your code or your code comment that you asked, instructed to do a thing, and then a section of your code, and it sends it off to the cloud and stuff happens. That send it off to the cloud, some companies may frown upon it. I believe your company says, nine,
yeah, you can't use it.
Du kannst nicht. You can't do it. You're not doing that. So being a German company, they say it that way. That's why I said that. So this is awesome because it's sort of like that, but that's probably the wrong mental model. But nonetheless, it's like totally local. So it comes as a plugin for PyCharm and others if you have the pro version. And it just lets you do like awesome code completion locally with no round tripping. Just pretty neat. And I think it was on by default on the new PyCharms because why not? So I want to give you an example to give you a sense so people, otherwise it's just like, hey, this thing, it's neat. It helps you write code. What does that mean? So here's a little bit of code I wrote. It's a Flask view endpoint and it's using Blueprint. So it says at blueprint.get/listing. It says a function def listing. And then it wants to show some videos and some view, right? So this is all code existing. I'm trying to help people get it since where it starts. Videos equals, you know, some database query to get a list of video objects, right?
Yeah.
Now, if you type the word RET, an attempt to begin to write return, do you know what tab will write for you with this LLM? Return, flask.render template, /home/listing.html because there's a hierarchy of the templates and that is the correct one. And videos equals videos, close parenthesis. Tab to write that.
Yeah, that's amazing.
You just do that all day. Just da da tab, da da tab, da da tab. Sometimes it gets it wrong. And sometimes it's close enough, you tab it and correct it. And sometimes it gets it. Actually, this is exactly what should be written, which is insane.
And some pretty long, like you're showing some pretty long stuff that I'm surprised by. Some short stuff, I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's
yeah, great. Yeah. Like, oh, we're going to sort the functions by like most used rather than alphabetical only. And like something silly like that, right? It's not that, it's way more than that.
But there's been times now I'm so loving this because there's times where I'm calling some API function and I'm just about to think, yeah, I don't use this very often. I have to look it up. And it just like pops it in and it's correct. I'm like, oh yeah, that's exactly what I wanted.
Thank you.
yeah. And I'm already getting used to it to the point where I can't live without it now. This is an incredible extra feature.
It is. And where it frustrates me is where I'll type a little too much. And it'll go away. I'm like, no, I should have just accepted it. I didn't read. How do I get this back?
yeah, I've actually like started over. I'm like, okay, delete the line and start over because that's easier.
It's going to be quicker than writing the rest of it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So anyway, like I know PyCharm Pro is a paid thing, but it's also one of the very most common tools. And this is not paid, but I think it's awesome. And so I just wanted to give a shout out for it because so many of these coding assistants do all this magic by sending all of your code to the cloud and they've got the cloud latency and all that. And this is just nice and local and sweet.
Yeah, that's the part that I really, I like that it's just easier. It fits in my workflow, but also like you said, at work, we have local like GPT kind of things that we can use that are company internal, which is a neat thing for people to do. But this is just local and it doesn't even go anywhere. So it's super fast. I can even have my laptop unplugged and this works. So it's pretty cool. Anyway, like, good job. Cool. Next up. So that's good news. We've got some bad news and I got this from like lots of people. So a lot of people were talking about this on Mastodon. The news is that Google seems to be shedding Python developers, at least in the US. There's a bunch of articles around it. So we've got registry talked about it. The registry kind of said Python and Flutter teams latest on the Google chopping block. Never mind, the record revenues cost must be cut. And I kind of like this article in that it highlighted that in this time where they're like laying off a lot of great people. Last week they announced a 1 year jump on the net profits to $23.66 billion over for Q1. So record profits. I don't know if that's record profits, but really great profits. And yet that's not enough, and they're cutting people. And I saw it all over Mastodon. TechCrunch has some highlights of different people posting, including from Thomas Wooders, who's one of the Python core people.
He's on the steering council too as well.
Oh yeah. And also Dart. So Google lays off staff from Flutter, Dart, and Python teams. And there's no official announcement as far as I can tell from Google yet. It's just since it was under 100 people, they're not announcing it.
Basically leaked messages from team leaders to the teams and stuff like that is what we're seeing.
Yeah. I don't remember what article I saw this in, and it's from the Register. I think some of the teams have been reduced in favor of a new team based in Munich. So taking people and then I thought, I don't know if this is true or not. I heard somebody mention that some of the laid off people are having to train their replacements, which is tacky and icky. So hopefully that's not true. Anyway, I hope everything goes well for everybody that is part of this and hopefully they land on their feet well. So good luck.
Yeah. Sorry, folks. Brian, it's like they want to try to take out my entire tech stack. So Python and then the mobile apps are Flutter and Dart. Yeah. And I was like, oh, come on. Yeah. I'm actually more worried about Flutter and Dart because Google is such a propensity to like just kill stuff. You know, there's the Google graveyard and all that sort of things that you hear about. And they're the lead of Flutter and Dart, whereas they're not in charge of Python. It's just unfortunate.
Yeah.
It's going that way.
Yeah. So, you've used Flutter and Dart before for projects,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. Yeah. So it's the TalkPython courses mobile app is built in.
Yeah. That'd
I would build it in Python if we had solid options there, but sadly, we're not there yet. Someday.
Yeah. All right.
Before we call it on that all of them, I have a quick follow-up to this that's part of this.
Okay.
This is not as timely, although it's an article from 7 days ago. It talks about the history last couple of years, and it's quite a long article. Let me look. The original. There we go. That's what I'm like. The original one on where's your ed at, which is an awesome domain. But it's a really long write-up. And it's entitled The Man Who Killed Google Search. And basically, it documents the struggle between the search team, whose job is to build features that are better for you, better for me, better for everyone, and the ad team, whose job is to make you do more queries so more ads show up so that you might click them.
Oh, geez.
And so they called for a code yellow, which in Google parlance actually means a really bad thing. Like code red would probably be the way people would think of it. It says people are finding what they look for too quickly and leaving. So what can we do to like make them see more ads, basically? And there was a big struggle for a couple of years. This all started in 2019, but it's basically the increpification, if you will, the slightly nicer Cory Doctorow term of Google search. And if you've felt like over the last couple of years, Google search has gotten worse,
it's intention.
On purpose so that you will spend more time seeing ads and maybe clicking them. How about that?
Nice. Well, yeah. So one of the things that people look at is your bounce rate. So I may get this wrong because I'm not really a stats wonk, but bounce rate, I think is, I don't know what it is. It measures how long people stay on your site and look at different, what is it? How many pages they see, look at before they leave or something?
I think bounce rate is you get to one page and you leave. You don't subsequently explore the page.
Okay. So a lot of people don't want that. And I personally, I think for my like blog and stuff, anything I'm doing, I love a low bounce rate. That means that my analytics and whatever, or my Google search terms and all that are correct. And people can find exactly what they're looking for right away. And they don't need to click around and find something else, but I'm not like pushing ads. So yeah. Anyway.
Yep.
I'll have to read this. This is very interesting.
It's super interesting. Yeah, I read it yesterday. It's really interesting. And it's not inspiring, but it is interesting. And the reason I even brought it up, not just because the word Google appears in both, but the like, hey, we don't care so much about the tech. We're not doing this to support the community. We need our cut. And what can we do to make that happen? It feels very much like the same vibe of it's motivating a lot of these layoffs. And like, yeah, we don't really, like, how do we make money on ads from Flutter? I don't think we do. Can we get that out of here? Like, these people are just dead weight. Like, that kind of thing, right? And these, a little less so for Python, but still.
Also, but this isn't a struggling company. This is one of the most profitable companies in the world.
Yes. I think they just became a $2 trillion stock market valuation.
So, it's not just we need to make money, but we need to make more and always more and always more.
Never enough.
So, anyway, it's too bad. Those are our topics. Do you have anything extra since you're...
I am feeling not very extra. I have one extra. One extra.
Okay. I got one extra.
This is good. Yeah. Cool. So previously I've spoken about LM Studio, and this is like right in line with what I was talking about earlier, local LLMs. So download, discover, and run local LLMs. The way it works is you run this app, then you tell it... you basically search Hugging Face models and they get rankings and all that kind of stuff. And then it just downloads a whole bunch of them. It gives you a chat interface. And you can say, now I want to run Mistral. Now I want to run Phi. Now I want to run whatever, right? You pick the ones you downloaded. Different sizes, all sorts of things. Well, the big deal is Llama 3, which is a very powerful but not too big open source LLM from Meta, is now available locally on LM Studio. And boy, oh boy, is it good. It's really good. So like, for example, I gave it a segment of a Docker Compose file with concrete settings. I said, tell me what this does. And tell me not just what do these mean, but exactly what does each command do? Like when it says restart, does it just, and it says restart 5 times until you consider it failed. Does it just try it as fast as it can? Is there some kind of way to set a timeout? It's like, oh, no, it uses an exponential back off and it works like this. And here's the formula to compute. I'm like, pretty good. Running locally. Highly recommend.
That's pretty cool. Nice.
Yep. So that's my only extra.
My one extra is just a public service announcement because I run into this all the time. I don't know. It's a basic Python thing, but this article, who's it from? I should give him his, anyway, somebody, sorry. It's Python gotchas, strip, lstrip, and rstrip can remove more than expected. And I do this all the time. I forget about it. So what lstrip, lstrip, and rstrip do is they take a string and they strip characters out of it. And if you give it like a word, it doesn't take the word out. That's a set of characters that it removes. And that's not usually what I mean. But Python has, what do they have? We have remove prefix and remove suffix that you want to use instead. So if that's what you want to do, if you just want to remove something after the beginning of a string, use remove suffix, remove prefix. And I bring this up because I always run into it. And then in my little test example, it works. And then I put it in a bigger project and it doesn't work. What's going on? So that's it. That's it. PSA.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it.
So anyway.
If you could start over, I think it would be awesome that lstrip and rstrip and all those things could take two keyword arguments that were required as keyword. One is characters and another is substrings or something. You just say characters equal this or substring equals that or something. But, you know, even changing keyword names, primary names is breaking because you can explicitly state them. So,
well, yeah. And it's a different interesting thing because strings are iterable. Like, because sometimes I really do want what it does. Like sometimes I want to take out the dashes out of a string or something. Like, yeah. Anyway. All right. Oh, let's see who is this from? This is Andrew Wagner. Andrew. So thanks, Andrew. All right. Something funny.
Oh, I got some funny today. I got a couple funny. So let's start with the traditional style of funny. So this comes to us from Dev Humor. And both you and I work on courses. We put a ton of energy into them. We don't charge that much money for them. But here's kind of a paradox or something. So this is a post that says, developers will spend $150,000 on a computer science degree. And then they go and learn JavaScript on YouTube for free and won't pay $20 for it, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, like, of course, you get that too, right? The people saying, like, can I get it for cheaper?
Yeah. And then I've been playing with PyJoke, the actual Python API, not the CLI of it. And did you know that in PyJoke, you can specify a category? And one of the categories is Chuck Norris. So let me read you. I'm just going to get like five Chuck Norris programming jokes for you. Are you ready for this? This one's right down your alley, the first one.
Okay.
Chuck Norris's unit tests don't run. They die. Okay. I'm gonna hit a few that are good. Okay. This one's pretty good. Chuck Norris doesn't need to use Ajax for JavaScript postbacks. Chuck Norris doesn't need to use Ajax because pages are too afraid to post back anyway. Chuck Norris can dereference null.
Okay, that's my favorite so far.
Hold on. Okay, last one. Chuck Norris's programs never exit. They are terminated.
Yeah, okay.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
So anyway, if you pass the Chuck category to PyJokes, plural, not PyJokes singular, pretty awesome.
Oh, those are two different things? PyJoke
and PyJokes? Well, oh yeah, one is like an expired version from 2014, and PyJokes has at least been updated in 2019.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Looking for contributors there, man. All right.
Exactly. Sure, we can get a few more of these. No one has ever paired program with Chuck Norris and lived to tell the tale. We can tell the tale of the podcast, Brian.
Yeah. Well, next week, are you back in town or?
I am back in town.
Okay.
Everything is back to normal. So glad.
Well, we'll talk to everybody next week.
Yeah. I'm glad we're able to do the show anyway. So
yeah.
Yeah. Good to see you.
Right. Bye.
Bye.